CityTalk 105.9 official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm. Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. CityTalk 105.9.
Hello and welcome to CityTalk's business with me, Frank McKenna. I'm the chairman of the Independent Private Sector Lobby Group and Business Networking Club Downtown Liverpool in Business. And every Sunday we look at some of the week's big business stories and talk to some key personalities, decision makers and entrepreneurs who work in and influence Liverpool and the wider Northwest region. This week we're going green. Environmental issues are increasingly high on all business agendas at the moment, and I'm joined in the studio today by three people who can help us through the minefield of issues that may affect your company. David Burton is the chairman of Stratico Group, Tom Barker from the School of Environmental Sciences at Liverpool University, and David Connor, who is a specialist in corporate social responsibility strategies. They're here today to tell us more. I'll also be looking ahead to some outstanding forthcoming events, including It's Liverpool, the business conference with the downtown events manager, Roger Jonas. But we kick off today with green issues and welcome David, Tom, and David, good morning to you all.
Good morning, Frank.
It is a huge agenda now for businesses. Dave, if I can start with you, Dave Connor. In terms of this corporate social responsibility phrase, I mean, it's something we often hear bandied about. It's something that an awful lot of SMEs would say, well, does it really matter to us? You know, does this not just apply to the big boys, you know, the Co-ops, the Bruntwoods, the Peels? I'm sure you can tell us why CSR is actually something that we should all be interested in and take note of.
Yeah, and I think the first thing I'd say, corporate responsibility has had an interesting track record, has definitely emerged over the last two, three, even 4 or 5 years. I think probably to offer my description for that is probably a good starting point. And for me, corporate social responsibility, or CSR, or CR, or even the other slight variations of sustainability or creating shared value, whatever's the latest flavour of the day. But it's really just about looking at overall business performance, not merely from a financial perspective. You know, businesses can't isolate or can't work in isolation anymore. If you're just thinking about the money, it's probably not a great long-term future for the business, and especially with some of the global environmental issues that are starting to creep into everyday operations. So really, if you take the approach, it's a lens to look at your business to improve performance. You know, some of them are financial decisions, some of them are environmental decisions that will help probably save money or improve efficiency. You know, and from a social perspective, well, every business employs people. You want the best out of them. Every business sells to people. You know, you can't get away from the fact that it is integrated into society. So, you know, there are some very practical, tangible, quick wins that you can advise to businesses and just say, look, you know, this is about making more money. Profit's not a bad word. You can still make money. But a lot of the time, it's just trying to look at CSR as an opportunity rather than just compliance. It's not about, well, we need to get this badge, otherwise we're going to get into trouble, or if we don't get this filter on our machinery, we're going to pollute the river. Yeah, you need to do that, but it's just a lens for making more money and creating a business that's around in 10 or 15 years. Mm.
Because I guess, Tom, what an awful lot of businesses will see the green agenda as is a bit of a nuisance. Something that gets in the way of progress. And then when you have our political leaders, as they have done this week, talking about there being too much red tape, too much legislation. And then, as David has rightly pointed out, you know, there's a whole range of narrative and language that's used around green issues and the green agenda. So, you know, to the ordinary business person, it's difficult, A, to see what the benefits are to adopting a more green approach to the way in which they undertake the business. But secondly, it's almost part of the mystifying effect an awful lot of government speak seems to have on issues which, my guess is really relatively straightforward if they're explained properly.
Well, I think you're right. There's a contrast between the short-term interests of business and the sort of long-term planning required to handle or to face up to the global environmental problems. And the truth is that we have a Climate Change Act that requires us to emit only 20% of the carbon we're emitting now in by 2050, and we've got to face up to that. And there are other things like, for example, global oil depletion, where we're now regarded as at the peak by the International Energy Authority of the amount of oil that can be taken out of the ground ever. And so that we're going to be facing a decline in fuel availability, about 5% per year on year, which means the prices are going to go up and up. And that means that the sort of theoretical environmental or scientific or political ambitions of government are coming up against real business interests in the short term now, or at least the medium term.
Mm. Would you take my point, though, that we need to find a way in which we can begin to explain in simpler terms to businesses, and not just businesses, the wider community if it comes to that, what the environmental agenda is about and why it's such an important aspect of, you know, the whole policy agenda at the moment?
I completely agree with your point. If you take what the public are subjected to in the media, in the print media particularly, you have, for example, the Daily Mail, the Daily Express, and even the Telegraph printing in big, bold headlines absolutely lies and deceptive things in order to deceive the public. And they're doing that for short-term economic reasons. They're obviously advised by people like the charming Lord Lawson, who his understanding of things like climate change is what you might call compromised at best. And he's there to push the short-term economic agenda. In case nobody's noticed, we are in the middle of a recession. The oil price I mentioned before goes down in every recession, and it goes up in between recessions. And the last few recessions, the oil price has gone down to $10. The next one, it went down to $20. The next one, it went down to $40 a barrel, this is. And present one, I just checked a couple of days ago, and the value of a barrel of oil is $82 now. So it's jumping up. And that if the oil is running out, there's not going to be the capacity to expand and come out of this recession. So we're likely to bounce from recession to recession from now on. If you look at the policies of government, they're trying to recapitalise European banks. You know, I think they ought to do some good for the people, their own people, with that money instead of support the past.
It is a very big political issue with a big P, I have to say. And, you know, if you go to the States, which, you know, is certainly a bigger polluter than the UK and probably most other countries other than maybe China, I can't think of any other that would be worse than the US, they have politicians who absolutely are set face and fair against any talk of global warming or the sort of issues that you guys would be looking for people to take note of. David Burton, is there any way you think that globally the environmental agenda can get some cohesion, some coordination, so that those bigger nation states, who, let's face it, are going to have far more influence on our environment than little old UK will ever have, can come together and come to some sort of agreement? Or do you think that's just utopia?
OK, before I answer that, Frank, I'd like to just pick up on a comment by Tom about energy prices and the global warming implications. I'm in business and I look for opportunities. I could tell you now that there are vehicle sales going up 15% year on year. There are small retail outlets growing exponentially around the UK, selling these vehicles, no CO2 outputs. I'm talking about bicycles. That's moving faster than politicians, than infrastructure, that frameworks can be put in place, because the public have seen the advantages, the health advantages, socio and environmental advantages of cycle sales. It sounds very simple, but it's one example of where there's business opportunities. And yes, we've got the Copenhagen conference, etc., on CO2 emissions and various examples of global action. Reducing CO2 emissions in the UK, to me, without being defeatist, is going to be wiped out by economic growth in China and India. Mm. And really, solving the CO2 emission problem, how does that save fish stocks? How does it save coral reefs? How does it stop desertification? How does it stop deforestation? We're going to be sitting here in a low-carbon world in theory, but when maybe 9 billion people were unable to feed or water or find resources for, we've got to look beyond the carbon, the carbon issue. Yeah. And that does take a real global movement, because we're going to look at issues of consumerism, if we're going to look at issues of the pursuit of economic growth at any cost, and certainly if we've got to look at the elephant in the room, population, that can only be done on a global basis. Mm. Absolutely.
Mm. But having said that, obviously we can't just throw the towel in and say, well, at the moment, the big country, you know, the States, China, India, those countries are certainly not as progressive, I think it's fair to say, as we would like to see them. What can we do at a regional level then that can really help push the agenda here locally?
I think even on a global basis, we've got technologies, albeit lack of investment has meant that a lot of other Western European countries have leapt ahead. But we've been able to bring China almost from a peasant economy to a blue chip technology society through Western technology. And some of the standards and operating practices in China far outweigh some pre-war factories that we see here in the UK, frankly. But regionally, we can do an enormous amount. And we've got to look, particularly looking at Merseyside and the D-Mersey area, I see that as a bioregion. And a bioregion is a region that has geological, climatic, agricultural, industrial, cultural commonalities that can look at attempting to achieve sustainability. And I think we've got to look inwards, because if you can achieve so-called sustainability, and it's a questionable phrase, but if you can achieve that regionally, you can achieve that nationally, you can achieve that globally. At least it's an aim we ought to go for, and that's where we've got to start looking inwards. In fact, I'm running a seminar at Shotton Paper Mill next Tuesday, if the readers, listeners are interested. Covering that very issue about local sustainable partnerships.
Mm. And how do we perform in terms of an economy, both in terms of our public sector, because obviously they have the responsibility for waste, for recycling, for those issues that, you know, will exercise the minds, yes, of businesses, but ultimately, you know, they are only as good, in a sense, as the public sector partners that they're working alongside. And again, you know, some of the bigger private sector companies who clearly will have challenges with this agenda.
There's minimum legislative requirements laid out in environmental legislation, and that produces both threats and opportunities, going through to your original point. And we need to go beyond that. And as David Connor was saying about corporate social responsibility, we've got to look beyond legal social responsibility. We've got to look at our responsibilities to the local communities and to the environment. And we've attempted within the Stratico Group to go one step beyond that. We're trying to do business sustainably, but with other businesses and public sector who actually share our values and our ethos. And I think if you can start moving into that world, you begin setting a standard of practice by example, that if it's successful, if it's financially successful, and my business has been going 8 years, never had borrowings of any kind, 5-star Experian rating, and yet I believe we are, you know, working environmentally as sustainable as we can. If that's not an example, if Marks and Spencer's Plan A isn't an example, and producing, I think, 15 million savings onto the bottom line, I think any company who thinks the environment is not going to affect them is going to be made extinct.
Mm. I think, you know, the more we can make this about the economy stupid, the more we convince businesses out there that actually this is the way to go. And equally, you know, local government now, which is facing its own challenges as far as budgetary considerations are concerned, need to start to be a bit more innovative, I would suggest, in terms of some of the ways in which they dispose of waste, for example. And that's just one key area of this whole agenda. But Tom, if I may come back to you, you were a lead author of The Economics of Ecosystems and Biodiversity for UNEP. Try saying that on a Saturday evening rather than a Sunday morning. If businesses in general don't work to enhance our environment, what do you think that the present impacts potentially could be?
Well, to carry on with the jargon, the loss of ecosystem services. The ecosystem services are things that nature does for us for free. So that would include providing bees to pollinate our crops, providing clean air, clean water, to protect us from flooding by retaining heavy rainfall in the environment, and so on. The total value of these things in global terms has been estimated to be greater than global GDP. So it's not a trivial thing. And we are damaging the provision of these services due to the what are called the externalities of the market economy. So the things that we don't count in terms of the market are sort of coming up behind us to bite us.
Okay. Hold that thought. We'll come and discuss that and more, I'm sure, after this very short break.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9.
And welcome back to the show. I'm joined in the studio this week by David Burton, who is the chairman of Stratico Group, Tom Barker from the School of Environmental Sciences at Liverpool University, and David Connor, who is a specialist in corporate social responsibility strategies. We've been talking about all things green. And Tom, before the break, you were just telling us about the potential impact that will happen if businesses generally don't begin to work to enhance our environment. And you were just really getting into your stride now to cut you off in your prime. So go back to that question again. What are the real consequences of inactivity around this area?
Well, I mentioned a couple of things and environmental services that provide for society, but there are other more hidden things, like, for example, levels of stress in staff working here in the city. When there are more green spaces and trees and grass and so on in the vicinity, the stress levels have been shown to go down in offices, production goes up, arguments reduce and so on. And there's things, similar things like the urban heat island effect, where it gets very hot with lots of expanses of concrete and so on, that can be relieved by vegetation and water and so on in the environment. So it's not just the global services worth a lot of money in a tangible sense. There's a workaday things as well, which can be improved by more environment, more habitat near us. But the value of these things and the need to provide these things does represent some sort of cost on society. And you have to provide a cost. So politicians tend to not really say that sort of thing. They don't want you to hear that there's going to be problems with the global ecosystem. We're in a massive extinction at the moment, one of the six great extinctions. Extinction rates are about 1,000 times the normal background rate of extinctions, and we have to do something about it. But politicians like to present this sort of everything's rosy, follow me type idea. And if you look at, and they do that because of votes, they want the votes. There's no votes in saying, oh God, everything's going wrong. Look at the Greens, they've been telling it like it is for decades, and nobody votes for them. That's why.
Okay. Well, politicians would say, to be fair to them, and I'm not very often that I am, but they will say, well, look, we've announced that there's going to be a green investment bank. The borrowing is expected, I think, in 2015. Do the panel think that this is hype, or is it a genuine attempt to get green investment? David?
I'm not convinced, to be fair. I mean, especially with the timescales involved, and I've had a few interesting discussions about the government's real green intentions, which I think increasingly not stacking up. To be fair, I don't think we can wait for that. I think it's a case of, you know, this is all about just common purpose, good business practice from a business perspective. You know, don't wait for 2015, or don't wait for the bank. You know, if there's a decent return on investment there, okay, and it might be over a longer period, and that's, you know, one of the problems that I think the private sector had. You know, we're trying to combine some huge global abstract issues, like David Burton was saying. You know, there's almost a perfect storm coming together of you know, peak oil, other resources becoming increasingly scarce and very expensive, even basic water provision and the way that that's distributing people around the planet. Over the next 50 years, there's going to be some huge, huge issues that we're all going to have to deliver on. But the problem is, how do we take all these abstract issues and make them tangible and real for, you know, smaller businesses in Liverpool. And there are increasingly, you know, connections. You know, the statistics around 50% of the rivers in the UK will have disappeared by the end of the century now. You know, that's going to affect us all. It is happening now. So for me, I've seen a big increasing enthusiasm from the investment community in general. Globally, they're starting to really look at both sort of clean tech investments and also looking at businesses that are demonstrating longer-term planning horizons. I mean, you look at what Unilever released their sustainable living plan about a year ago, and that's basically a 30-year business plan. And because of their dependence on all these basic materials like water and the geographies that they operate, you know, they're going to halve their emissions, halve their waste in an incredibly challenging circumstances. They don't know how they're going to do it, but they know that they have to do it to be still operating in 30 years. So for me, it's if we can encourage businesses to take that approach, you know, there are more investment opportunities, regardless of whether it's a green investment bank or not. If it's a good business proposition, okay, and the time period is probably going to be slightly longer for a payback period, but, you know, for me, it would be, don't rely on the green investment bank, just see what you can do now.
Yeah, I think the problem, though, David, is, if I may say so, for most businesses at the moment, you know, they're struggling with pressures in terms of sales. They'll be struggling in terms of their relationship with the banks. They're struggling with the tax man at the moment, who are chasing them every day and chasing them hard. So, you know, a green investment bank may be at least a signal, will it not, to say, firstly, there is an issue around here and there are opportunities here. And secondly, at least there will be some help available.
We've already got a couple of good green banks. They're not perfect, but the Co-op and Triodos, for example, both who have sailed through this economic crisis with healthy balance sheets and more customers than ever before. Mm. So if that's not an indication of good environmental business practice, I don't know what is. However, I think unless the chief executive is Sir David Attenborough and the chairman is Tim Smits from the Eden Project, and maybe the chief auditor being Jonathan Porritt, I agree with David Connor.
Nigel Lawson there.
I think that they're going to be focused on the large projects, and you know the answers lie with SMEs. I really do believe people who've got involved in business for reasons other than commercial, people who've believed in their product in delivering environmental solutions, and great if they've made a financial success of it, but those people find it very difficult to access the funding. Whereas the Richard Bransons of this world, you know, Richard Branson doesn't have to put his house on the line to get some money out of the bank. Yeah. But a guy with an SME who's got an environmental product, an environmental service or an idea, usually has to do. And we have to break that. And maybe if the Green Bank can come down at that level, it may be successful. And there's good examples in India and in Africa where small, local banks supporting community projects have worked, but almost by definition, they're not the national green bank idea, and I think it's going to struggle.
Okay. Let's try and get some positivity into the discussion, because the listeners on this Sunday morning will be on the verge of slashing the wrist if we don't. If each of you had to give advice to a small or medium enterprise about building environmental issues into everyday policy, and given them some real positive reasons to do that, what would that advice be? I will start with you, Tom.
Well, first of all, put some solar panels on your roof and work out ways to reduce your waste and your use of energy, particularly by increasing efficiency, and other methods of battening down the hatches, really, because although I agreed with what was said largely by the other two on the Green Investment Bank, I think it's actually a good thing. But I think the tangible effects on business are happening now. And this recession was predicted by a chap called Jeff Rubin, the chief economist of WIBC World Markets, And he put it down to the oil price. And if that's so, which is there's a lot of evidence to support that view, then we're going to be, in this recession we're in now, is going to be part of a global environmental problem. And as the amount of oil available goes down and the amount of demand stays the same, we're going to be bounced from recession to recession. And so that is an immediate reason why businesses should embark on some of these things. And there are businesses in Liverpool, I won't name them, but who have done this sort of overhaul. They reduced their dependency on electricity supply and other forms of heating, reduced their wastes, and they're examples to everybody.
OK. David, anything to add to that?
Oh, yeah, a whole list of tips. I think you need to find a champion. And usually there's a bit of an eco-warrior hiding in just about every SME. Even if it's only an informal responsibility, just give them some room to explore where the potential quick wins are. When you talk about environmental issues, the big savings come when you start reducing energy and you start reducing waste. I think, we're doing much better now, but if you can allow a champion to just have some free rein to explore that, that's always a good option. A bit of training is good as well. I think there's still some funding out there for training. Or talk to other businesses. There is a lot of support out there. Some of it is better than others, I'll be diplomatic. But there are some really great SME champions now, and they're really starting to get the credit they deserve for doing that. I think the other key thing as well, when you talk about environment, even though you need to find a champion, probably the most important person to win over is the head of finance. If you can articulate the arguments here, say, look, there's cost savings here or potential cost savings there. If you can win the chief finance officer over or the financial director, I think you've got a really good chance of getting this throughout the whole organisation. Because even though you've got a champion, everybody needs to be looking for opportunities. The owner-manager has to buy in. They have to, demonstrate some commitment that they're not just doing this to tick a box.
Okay.
You've got your champion who's looking for ideas. But, it has to be everybody, all hands to the pump like everything else.
Okay. David, if I can come to you finally, David Burton, as chairman of a group of environmental companies, what policies would you suggest that firms need to have in place?
I think
policies you have that they could learn from?
Well, the starting point is something like ISO 14001, which mustn't be a box-ticking exercise, but is an environmental qualification. The other easy starting point, as Tom and David have referred to, is looking at energy. It's one of those areas where environmental and economics come together. If you save energy, you save CO2 emissions, et cetera, et cetera. The big challenges now are not technical. The technical solutions are there. It's really about behavioural, attitudinal and cultural change. They are the big challenges, whether we're talking about businesses or householders and our life on this planet. Do you know the Brundtland Report 20 years ago, the Treaty of Rome's Limits to Growth Report, now getting on to 40 years ago, said that the way we're living is unsustainable. It cannot go on. It's the most frightening phrase I've ever heard in my life. And yet it had no impact. We really do need to change, and we can only do that by changing ourselves within. The policies, the support, the strategies will follow. But it's interesting now because we're seeing customer demand, whether that's for organic food or eco-holidays or whatever, we're seeing customer demand starting to change what companies are expected to deliver. And I see that as being really positive, to put a bit of positive spin on the discussion. And it does open up opportunities. And I gave the example earlier on of the bicycle example.
I think it's been a fascinating discussion, guys. I think that, these issues are so complex at some level that there'll be businesses out there, as I say, who will struggle sometimes to engage with the debate. I think we've done our best to keep it simple. It has to be simple when I'm interviewing you. But thanks very much for your contribution today. If I may ask, and any of you can throw the answer back at me for this, if I'm a company out there now who is desperate to get more information, more advice and support on the sort of issues that you've been talking about today, who can they contact? and don't be shy.
But certainly I can plug Stratica. We have a strategic environmental consultancy, which is really saying that the environment is bringing threats and opportunities. So if they want to go onto stratico.co.uk, they'll find some contact points there.
That's fantastic. Thanks for a fascinating discussion this Sunday morning. After the break, we'll be turning our attentions to a major business conference that's being organised this coming November, and we'll be looking ahead to one or two other exciting events that we have in store for you with the Downtown Events Manager, Roger Jonas. Stay with us. We'll be back right after this short break.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9.
And welcome back to the final part of the programme. I'm joined in the studio by the ubiquitous Roger Jonas, the Downtown Events Manager. We have a very exciting autumn ahead of us, and with this radio station, City Talk 105.9 and Liverpool Vision, we are putting on a fantastic event on the 14th of November at the Crown Plaza Hotel. It's Liverpool, the Business Conference. Roger, who are the latest names to be joining us on the day?
Stellar lineup, Frank. Absolutely stellar. Last week I had a meeting and it was really jaw-dropping, just talking about the people we've got on board already. The conference is going to be opened, believe it or not, by Sir Howard Bernstein, the chief executive of Manchester City, which is a massive coup that Howard's going to travel down the M62 and launch the conference. He's going to be making a keynote speech about how the public sector can encourage enterprise, which I guess is pretty high on the regional, national, global agenda.
And the reason we've approached Howard to do this is that, you know, the term that will be bandied around on the day and is always bandied about when it's business conferences, business seminars, that word entrepreneurship. And I think civic entrepreneurship is something that is often forgotten. You know, the need for people in positions of power within local authorities, within national governments, to actually facilitate and enable the private sector to get on and be successful. And I think Manchester demonstrates how that's done, really.
Well, absolutely, absolutely. And it's, as you say, it's key on everybody's agenda. I guess it's been recognised that enterprise and entrepreneurship are going to be the rejuvenators of the economy. And who better to ask than you know, a city that's had a tremendous success, a political leader, a civic leader who's really made that his main focus, and has got some enviable outcomes.
Once Howard's done his bit, we're moving on to Liverpool, I suppose.
Yeah, we're next. We're going to look at, I guess, the next 10 years. And again, who better to turn to than the leaders of Liverpool? We've got Joe Anderson, leader of Liverpool City Council, the chief executive, Jed Fitzgerald, and a major visionary in my eyes, Max Steinberg, who's the chief executive of Liverpool Vision. Again, you know, sharing a platform with three key individuals like this is pretty unheard of in the past in business terms, and you know, I think it's going to add massively to the calibre of the conference.
And when I've been talking about putting this event together with the civic leaders in the city, one of the things I've said to them is that we don't want this to simply be an event where people come along and are talked at. It has to be an event where people feel engaged and are given an opportunity to respond and make suggestions, come up with ideas. Yeah. We've got three people who will be making decisions on our behalf for a significant period of time in the future, and this is a great chance for business people to come along and have their tuppence worth, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's from the horse's mouth, isn't it? You know, and the idea of the conference is it will be slick, it'll be thought-provoking, it'll be challenging, and I think it'll certainly be challenging for the members of the panels, the various panels on the stage and in the seminars that we're running. because it's got to be a warts and all, and I think there will be some challenging questions from the delegates. And by the way, the delegates list is as impressive as the speakers list, to be honest. So, I mean, I think it's a long time since we've seen a conference of this nature and of this calibre in the city, and I think it's, as I say, the whole idea is to make it as slick as we possibly can, so that, you know, we cover a lot of angles. The drive has to be a route map to business, to business growth, and you know, as we carry on, and you know I tell you more about the other people, you'll see exactly why we've invited certain people. The you know, obviously the skill base that we've focused on is about business growth and inviting people who have a track record in developing business and the growth of cities.
Well, you mentioned warts and all as part of the discussion that we'll be having, and often on this programme, and indeed was even discussed recently by the legend that is Pete Price. Liverpool has a particular reputation internationally, which most people would say is positive, but within the UK, and again, we've talked about this very often on this show and elsewhere, not necessarily the case in the southeast of England. And so we've invited the outspoken, some would say controversial, Toby Young to address the conference. Tell us a bit more about Toby.
Well, Toby is an author, a journalist. Everybody will recognise the name, and when you Google him after the show, you'll instantly recognise who he is. Toby wrote the book How to Lose Friends and Alienate People, which was turned into...
I obviously mastered that.
But that was turned into a film. I think it was Simon Pegg who played Toby Young. And as you say, he is quite controversial, and he's quite humorous as well. He's very big into education, so I guess that... you know, he'll be able to give us a perspective across the board from his track record in his industry. Hopefully he'll be radical, hopefully he'll be controversial, but he'll give us an outside perspective, I guess. You know, Liverpool has recently, this year, launched the embassy in London. Massive success already. Well outside its three-month tenure. And you know, I guess the thing that the feedback we've had in terms of an outsider's perspective is quite varying when you travel up and down the country. We're going to go to the heart of the business capital, London, and find out what they think about Liverpool, and hopefully give us some hints as to maybe the direction that we need to go as a business nation.
And of course, the thing is, you can't just have a forum like this and have everyone patting themselves on the back. You know, we need to find out if there are tricks that we're missing, if perceptions are still negative, why that's the case. We had this guy, Ian Dale, at the Labour Party conference a couple of weeks ago, saying some not very nice things about the city. It was well over the top. It wasn't constructive in any way. But if this guy, Toby Young, who has the ear of people like Boris Johnson, like David Cameron, like the Education Minister, if he comes and says, well, actually, Liverpool, you know, to really start to make a mark in London, you need to do this, this and this, then we should take note of that and listen.
Absolutely. You know, I guess the leadership is based on the strength of that leadership, and I guess leaders can only be as strong as the people who they're consulting and who they're talking to. I'm really excited about what Toby Young has got to say. Hopefully, you know, from the questions that people ask of him, he will be able to take something very positive back and make the significant people listen, whereas I believe up to now, in terms of Liverpool, they haven't necessarily done that.
And I'll tell you what, we need to be giving Toby Young food for thought as well, and giving him some tales of the success that we've had in this city over the past decade, and letting him take those messages back to the people that he speaks to on a regular basis. Equally, we have Paul Levi from Philadelphia. Paul is the chief executive of the Business Improvement District, and obviously has vast experience in terms of city development, city growth. He'll be coming sharing his experiences with us as well. There's going to be a specific seminar on business improvement districts and other initiatives that can help cities grow economically. We've also got a seminar being led by Google, and obviously they will be focusing on IT, but not simply the latest gadgets, but things that can make your business more profitable. You invest heavily on your IT systems, all businesses do these days, but are you maximising the value of that investment? And who better to tell you whether you are or not than Google? And we've also got some very high profile entrepreneurs, Natalie Haywood from Leaf, Victoria Brown from High Performance Consultancy, Tony Caldera from Caldera Limited, and Gavin Wealdon from Applied Language Solutions, all successful business owners and entrepreneurs in their own right, who'll be sharing their thoughts, their experiences with us on the day. And then the grand finale to the day, I suppose, a Liverpool entrepreneur who now owns a Midlands football club.
Wolverhampton Wanderers Football Club. Chairman of Red Row, absolutely compelling speaker, Steve Morgan. When the Global Entrepreneurship Congress was organised, we organised an event at the Hilton Hotel. We had, again, a stellar lineup, and Steve contributed to that massively. And as I say before, he's a compelling speaker, a massively successful businessman who started, I think, when he was 11 years old, selling Conkers in the playground, and grew his empire, Red Row. Then invested in Wolverhampton Wanderers. And, you know, I think a frank conversation with Stephen Morgan is going to be a massive finale for the conference. And again, I think is going to encourage a lot of challenging questions. Mm.
And if anybody's interested in joining us at Downtown Liverpool, Liverpool Vision and City Talk 105.9, who will be recording many of the speeches from the day for broadcast, then you will be coming to the Crown Plaza Hotel on Monday the 14th of November, and you can get all the details off of the Liverpool, Downtown Liverpool website, www.downtownliverpool.com. We'd love to see you there. But we don't stop there, Roger. It's not all about business in November. It's about having a bit of fun and celebrating as well. We are living in tough, challenging times. We talk about the difficulties businesses face every single week on this programme. But it's that time of year again, the Liverpool Awards, the 9th annual Liverpool Awards.
God, is it the 9th one?
The 9th one.
God, you don't look old enough, Frank.
I know. I started when I was 12. Oh. And so how can people get involved in those?
Well, again, all the nominees are online now, so you can vote for them. We're already, and we say this every year, and it amazes me, we've already smashed all records in terms of volume of votes. You can go online again to the Liverpool website and cast your vote across a whole array of award categories. Do you know what? I've just realised I'm going to move into the Crown Plaza that week. We've got, obviously, Liverpool Business Conference on the 14th of November, and on the 17th, we've got Liverpool. Still a few tables left. Not many, I have to say, as is always. And again, all registrations and table bookings can take place online. Again, I think it's come and join an amazing lineup of some of the top business leaders in the city. Great networking opportunity. Let your hair down. Have a mass amount of fun and a few surprises along the way.
Well, we've got a Christmas theme this year.
We have.
Because we think that the business community deserves Christmas to come early. So it is going to be a great night. It always is. But I think this is going to be extra special. I'm really looking forward to it. But as Roger said, the nominees have been announced. They're all on the Downtown Liverpool website. If you've not voted yet, please click onto the website and tell us about the individuals that you think deserve an honour this year, 2011. We're coming to the end of what has been a very different type of programme, I think, for City Talks Business this week. I would like to thank All of my guests, particularly our event manager, Roger Jonas, and also thank my producer, Jonathan Dean. Most of all, thank you for listening. If you say a prayer today, then please remember the fantastic Apple innovator, Steve Jobs, who so sadly passed away on Wednesday of this week. Have a great week, and don't do anything I wouldn't do.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9. Listen, and log on to great music and great conversation on City Talk 105.9.